Quick content warning, everybody. We do discuss thoughts of suicide as well as medical procedures that might make some squirmish in this episode.
Hi, welcome to Sapphic Survival Guide, where we are queer to answer your questions. My name is Cheyenne.
And I'm Gina.
Class is now in session, and today we are talking about health and wellness, specifically for queer people. Gina, do you want to go ahead and talk about, I was going to say what's wrong with you, but like, it's not what's wrong with us. It's just what we have to deal with that capitalist society is like, actually, you're broken because you have X, Y, and Z wrong with you, and you're not putting into the capitalist machine enough, so we need to fix you. So what health conditions have you had the pleasure of struggling with?
I would love to give you my medical history. I actually think I've been relatively lucky as just a person overall, because I didn't need like overall like extra attention when I went to the doctor. I didn't need braces. I didn't have too many issues. I do think that I have some sort of like underlying trauma from one incident when I was really young where they thought I had either like pneumonia or bronchitis or something. And I remember being really young and being under chest x-ray machines and being kind of like nervous about it. But other than that, I haven't really had many issues. As an adult though, I did get diagnosed with a disease that I have a really hard time saying called hidradenitis suppurativa, which I might've talked about in Patreon episodes.
You've talked about it basically, in other episodes.
Yeah. It's basically an autoimmune disease that makes me get a higher chance of having abscesses and small cysts in areas that have a lot of hair follicles and sweat and stuff. And I have a lot of like medical anxieties, which I don't know if that comes from something that happened when I did get those like chest x-rays really young, or if it's just because I haven't had to really go to the doctor much since. So it's like a lack of exposure. But those dermatologist visits where I had to get like an abscess drained was very anxiety inducing. Any gynecologist visits were very anxiety inducing. Getting my IUD placed and replaced was like horrible. So I'm not like in love with going to the doctor, but I think I do need to talk to my therapist about like why I have all these medical anxieties. Cause I don't think I've had that much go.
I think I honestly do. When you were talking, I was like, it's the lack of exposure. So you like haven't had, like, I have a few chronic conditions. So I go to the,
You've been to the doctor more than me. Right. Yeah, you've been to the doctor more than me.
And like my friend's kid just got shots for, I think, the first time that she remembers. She's like four and she just got three shots, and they had to like hold her down and give her shots. And I remember when I was a kid, they used to have to hold me down because I'd be screaming at the top of my lungs.
Wow.
And my mom worked at the doctor's office. So she's like, this is embarrassing. My kid like cannot handle it. And now I get blood work drawn like every 6 months ish, sometimes more frequently than that. And I get tattoos. So now I'm fine.
I get tattoos, but needles are different. Like when I had to get my wisdom teeth taken out, I had a full on panic attack in front of the nurses. Like my legs were shaking while I was being put to sleep. Cause I was in my head, I was like, it's not going to work. I smoke too much weed, so it's not going to affect me. I was thinking all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I like don't love needles, but there were like certain situations I would like freak the fuck out in. Like I had to have a spinal tap a couple years ago and it was horrible. It was really traumatizing. It like lasted a lot longer than it should have lasted. And I was in horrible pain. And then I woke up in horrible pain and I was like screaming in the hospital for pain and they just like wouldn't do anything. Like I was in, like, I was miserable. I thought I was dying. So like probably nothing in my back again, nothing in my lower back. My mom has had to have a needle. Oh, okay. Trigger warning for gore.
I know. Grossness. I was going to say, I'm already so squirmish.
Yeah. No, my mom has had to have needles go into her eye before. And I don't think I could do that. I really don't think I could do that one at all. like that. Oh, she
sounds horrible
at an optometrist's office, and that's like a regular thing she encountered. And I don't think I could do that one. But like, I had a tooth pulled a few, like a month and a half ago, and like they had to numb my gums, and like that wasn't fun, but like I can deal with that. I don't know. So like going into my medical history, I like got my first surgery when I was really young. I was like 4. I got my tonsils and my adenoids out because I was getting like constant sore throats and strep throat. And then I think I mentioned this before, I was in college, and that's when I had to have my hymen surgically removed. And I was just telling my girlfriend about that earlier today, and how I like got to see pictures of it afterwards, like
at the of your hymen,
what was
of your
left
canal
of it. Yeah.
What and did it look like?
That's exactly what she asked, and I was like, I don't know, a vagina. Like it just looked like a red
walls
mass with like
of flesh
tacked back, like I don't know. It's hard. Yeah, it was like a cross shape, and then they tacked the flaps back, kind of deal.
Oh my god!
Yeah, so I had that done, and then I like skipped over a whole thing. So when I was a senior in high school, I got diagnosed with hypothyroidism. So basically, my thyroid doesn't work. It's very slow. It's called slow thyroid. It's like underactive thyroid. It's basically my thyroid is attacking itself. So that's like a chronic health condition that I'm going to be on medication forever for, and have tried a bunch of different medications, and it's given me like chronic fatigue and all these other fun symptoms. And I've also had like anemia and, you know, fun things that pop up. And then I also have like depression and anxiety partially because of these things, because they're not fun to live with, because it's not conducive in our society to live in a world where your body isn't 100% productive all the time. Yeah. And my body has been less than productive my whole life. So it's hard to like figure out how to function in a world where you literally can, and it's exhausting. And I don't even have it as bad as other people. Like other people are struggling with it a lot more. And it's very sad, but I'll get off my soapbox about that. And then when I mentioned the spinal tap, that was when I was in the hospital in November of 2021. That was because I was developing Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is like a French name that describes when basically my nerves started attacking themselves and dying off. And I like was losing my ability to walk. I like couldn't tense my hands, like everything.
Oh, yeah,
was,
you
like,
talked
amazing.
About this at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was like really painful. I was also losing my vision at that point. So I was hospitalized for like 10 days, and then I had to do inpatient physical therapy and then outpatient physical therapy for that. And I still have like permanent nerve damage. And I take like, how many medications do I take every day? Like 15, maybe. I don't know, maybe less. I've like gone up and down my whole adult life. So yeah, I think that's a fun little journey into our health issues.
Yeah. One of our first questions asked, is there a link to certain conditions and queerness? But I don't think any of ours, aside from maybe certain mental health things, are linked. Like none of our physical conditions, I think, are linked to queerness.
Yeah, I was definitely going to say depression, anxiety, mental health, mental illnesses, just because we are in a society, like I said before, that isn't quote unquote made for us, and that we find it difficult to exist in some ways, or that society makes it difficult for us to exist in. So I think that causes a lot of depression and anxiety. But I was also going to mention, so I know that there has been some research and overlap done about autism and queerness. And
I've heard that before.
Also like autism and chronic conditions, like certain, I think hypomobility with your joints, and I think POTS and IBS, like a bunch of different things, that there's like some interlap. And then there also is some interlap with autism and like not conforming to gender or sexual norms, because you know, your brain works differently. So I think that's where I know about the connection, but I wouldn't say like correlation doesn't equal causation there. Like I'm not saying like,
no.
Yeah. So
I wonder how much of that too is that if you are a part of any social group that is underrepresented or some form of oppressed in society. If you maybe are more aware of the fact that there are other ways to live than, you know, what's under the normativity umbrella. And so is it more that like their minds are more open to those things because of the experiences that they're having, which, you know, maybe we're decades away from a solid answer and research of these things. But I also think because of the history of what queer people go through, anxiety is common among queer people. Even before we like put a name to it, I think the same with depression. I feel like I was depressed because I knew I was different. I didn't even have an answer. And that was part of the depression, like when I was in high school and stuff. And I think those things are directly correlated to like queer experiences, but it's not just, oh, you're anxiety filled and you have depression, so you must be queer. Obviously. And it's also not, oh, you're queer, so you're clearly depressed and full of anxiety. Like, I don't know about that. I'd be curious too, to know if there's links between like ADHD and OCD. I have a lot of friends who are queer and have ADD. I have not been diagnosed for OCD, but I certainly have had a lot of symptoms. But I don't know, you know, we're not experts on any of these things, so I don't know, but I think that a lot of mental conditions could come and have an overlap with queer experiences.
Yeah, because a lot of them are like, they stem from not only genetics, nature, they also stem from nurture and the society that you're raised in. So it makes sense that if you are outside of what society considers the norm, it might have some long-term health consequences and even benefits if you think about it. But I thought you were going to go in the direction that queer people may have less access to things that would either prevent conditions or prevent the progression of conditions, because I don't think like health isn't imperative, right? Like being healthy doesn't make someone a good person or a moral person. Like you're still an amazing person, even if you're not healthy. And that's why the fat phobic argument, like, oh, but you need to be healthy if you want my respect. Why don't you just respect that person because you respect them? Why do they have to be quote unquote healthy? What about skinny people who are quote unquote unhealthy? Like why is that your bar for treating someone with respect? And I think like if someone is queer and they're not able to access like gender affirming or sexuality affirming providers, maybe that stops them from getting help to treat things or to prevent or to, you know, just get rid of like pain symptoms or unwanted symptoms. So I think there are like a lot of different things that go into it, but also like, even if there is that link and we are quote unquote less healthy than the cishet society, like that doesn't mean anything. Like I hate that there's like this pressure to like devalue people because they're not healthy, and it all does tie back to the capitalism thing of like who can be productive members of society. And it's just like, what does productivity mean to you? I'm reading a book about that right now called How to Do Nothing. And it's about like civil disobedience and like doing nothing in opposition to, as like a counterculture, basically just like existing as you are and not trying hard to go in the opposite direction or whatever. So that's my book recommendation for today.
Well, speaking of some of this overlap, and because I know that with having some of the mental conditions like depression, anxiety, that does often lead to self-harm and self-harm events. Somebody asked, what is your advice for suicide prevention for self and friends, especially with the rise of anti-queer and anti-trans media and movements? I love that that part is a part of this question. Specifically for myself, I have absolutely had depression episodes fueled by being overwhelmed and things in the media. So that's a really important aspect, I think, to take into account when you ask a question like this.
Yeah. I actually asked my girlfriend for advice on this one because she's a mental health professional. So I asked her, brought in the expert for this one. And she suggested getting a safety plan together with your friends. So that is identifying who is a good person to reach out to when you're having a mental health crisis, or who maybe isn't a good person, who typically makes it worse, what kinds of events trigger these feelings for you, and ways that you can like minimize the reaction or even minimize like exposure to the trigger in general. Like if talking to a certain person tends to be very triggering for you, like it's an abusive situation or something, and you are able to like distance yourself from them or like have removed yourself and have the choice of interacting with someone that's very triggering for you. That's something that like, I would say interact with them as little as possible because, you know, you don't want to be triggered in that area. And then you can also add in like things that you can do as distraction. Like in my therapy, a lot of the advice I get is learning how to distract and cope and self-regulate because I struggle with all of those things a lot. So I would say look up like safety plan, and there should be like templates that you can follow, and you can do it with your friends and hold each other accountable. Make sure, you know, like if you notice your friend is starting to get depressed, maybe they're not responding a lot, or they're just like ruminating on the things that they tend to ruminate on when they get really depressed. Maybe that's your sign to be like, hey, do you need to reach out to so-and-so? Or do you need, like, I know sometimes people will shower in freezing cold water, and that's like an anxiety reset button. So like, that's something that you could prompt your friend to do. But also it's important to not take responsibility for their mental health and try to manage it too much. Like you really have to have like good boundaries with that, because that's really bad for your mental health if anything happens, or even if it doesn't, just like trying to prevent it from happening, like that's not healthy for you either. So that's when you would say like, hey, I don't have the spoons to have this conversation just at this moment. I do really care about you. You're my friend. Could you reach out to, you know, the next person on the list, and maybe we can talk about it later, or maybe we can talk about something fun right now. I can't talk about this at this moment. So like the list could be friends, it could be neighbors, it could be family members. Like there are lots of different people. And at some point you might just have to encourage them to speak with a professional and take it a little step farther, which I know can be helpful in some situations and unhelpful in others. Not all mental health professionals are created equally, but I think like having a safety plan in place is like a good prevention step. And then I also just read Feeling Good, the New Mood Therapy, and that like is mostly about cognitive behavioral therapy. Yeah, it's by David Burns. It was written in like 1981 or 85 or something, and has been updated. It was like the book that popularized CBT. CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy. And it has information about different cognitive distortions and techniques for like minimizing the distortions. And it talks about how our thoughts cause our feelings and not necessarily the other way around. But once we learn how to like basically out logic those feelings, it's easier to like get out of them. And obviously, like using too much logic and not ever feeling your feelings isn't helpful either. But I feel like those are like extremes, right? And I feel like for me, I like let my feelings control me sometimes. So like using methods to be like, okay, I'm blowing this situation out of proportion. Like my only option right now isn't to die. Like I have other options that I can utilize. But like in my mind, when something bad happens, that is where I go to. And I feel like a lot of other people with mental health issues, especially depression, like it goes to like worst case scenario, but there are like other steps we can take to avoid that. And they had like a really good quote in that book. I don't remember the exact quote. I should have written it down. But basically he said he's worked with so many people who had depression and did not commit suicide. And a bunch of people have told him that they now know why they had to live, or now they know why like that shouldn't have happened. And he was like, even if you never figure it out, you don't know unless you live. Like even if you like never realize why you had to stay alive or like get past that period of your life, you don't know if you end your life, like, you don't know if you're gonna get to that point if you end your life. Like, you never know. Like, I'm not saying that anyone should endure the suffering that they go through or deserve it, or it's like a bigger meaning or anything like that, but just saying, like, there's no way to get to the other side unless you stay the course. Yeah. And I was like, that's powerful. I like that. And that's like, maybe seems like common sense to a lot of people, but as someone who does struggle with depression, that was like mind-boggling for me. So maybe it'll be helpful to someone else.
Yeah. I love the advice from the expert. I love your advice as somebody who has experienced depression. My only addition, in just being somebody who has sought medical professionals for therapy, my only advice on that, number one, if you are not vibing with that therapist, it is totally okay to go to somebody else. You need to, it's, you know, a delicate dance to find the person who's going to work for you. And also, do not wait until you're in a crisis to then have to go find that person. I have my therapist, even if you don't see them super regularly, knowing that I have a therapist who's already kind of like knows my background, if anything were to happen, knowing that we're not starting from square one would be a huge help. And if you're in a crisis, the last thing you're going to want to be doing is like looking around, trying to figure out who you're going to talk to. Like, you want to just be able to have that person. So plan ahead. Just know that you're not, you know, failing by having somebody on standby or anything. It's a really responsible thing to do, to have a medical mental health professional that you can call upon if things go in that direction.
And then there's also, like, I know it's not necessarily ideal, but there are suicide hotlines. There's, like, in my city, there's like a crisis hotline that you can call, that you can get assistance with. So there are options if you don't happen to have a therapist, but I agree with Gina. You don't want to have to wait 4 months for a new patient intake appointment when your crisis is right now. So I would definitely have someone kind of like there for you. Another question we got was, how do I manage anxiety while being queer and neurodivergent?
Well, I wouldn't describe myself as neurodivergent. I do think that anxiety is ever present in queer people for a multitude of reasons and in a multitude of ways. The only thing I have for managing my anxiety is an extreme amount of attempting to have self-awareness and a lot of self-talk tracks, which has been developed through going to therapy over years and learning how to use those mechanisms. But it is something where, like, you have to be aware of your triggers, what you do to counteract them when you're going in anxiety loops. But it's not easy because it's a lot. And that's coming from somebody who doesn't identify as neurodivergent. So I don't think it gets easier when you add layers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I do identify as neurodivergent. I have ADHD, but I don't know that my answer is specifically for other neurodivergent people. I think anyone could benefit from this. But again, my advice would be to reference the cognitive behavioral therapy techniques. A lot of my therapist's recommendations for me when I'm experiencing anxiety is distraction. So like doing something that I literally can't think about anything else except the task at hand. And then usually once I like I'm done with that, the thoughts have like dissipated, not always, and it doesn't always work, but like the CBT techniques, like I can figure out when I'm generalizing things or if I'm like taking something personally that's personalizing, or using black and white thinking or all or nothing thinking. Like there are so many different cognitive distortions that all of us yeah. That's literally generalizing, all of us do regularly. And it's like, we don't even think about it just because it's so like ingrained in our thought processes and our language. And like the stuff that I learned about years ago, because I've been in therapy for years and I've done group therapy and I was a psych major when I was in college and just, you know, I've had exposure, but like reading that book, for some reason, it like was a different type of exposure perspective on it for me. But I was like talking to my therapist about it, and she recommended the book rewire your anxious brain, how to use the neuroscience of fear to end anxiety, panic, and worry, which is by Catherine M. Pittman and Elizabeth M. Carl. I actually started reading that right before we started recording tonight. So I haven't learned very much yet, but I know a lot of it is biological, or like you can like turn off anxiety biologically. So like sometimes when I'm anxious, I'll breathe in for 4 seconds, hold it for 4 seconds, breathe out for 4 seconds, hold it for 4 seconds, and just do that over and over. And that kind of like resets your autonomic nervous system and helps you to like relax, because when you're anxious, usually you have shallow, quick breaths and not like a rhythm like that. And like I mentioned earlier, sometimes people take the cold water showers or like will dunk their face in cold water because that like stimulates your vagus nerve. And I guess that has, I don't know all the science behind it. And I can't explain it off the top of my head, but that like can help. You can do the 5-4-3-2-1 method. That's where you look for five things you can see, 4 things you can touch, 3 things you can hear, 2 things you can taste, 1 thing you can smell. I don't know. I never get those right. But like
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's something like that. So those are different techniques.
I like to change rooms or like change environments or like taking the dogs on a walk and like getting outside for a couple minutes, like any kind of reset, deep breaths for sure. Yeah. All good coping mechanisms.
Yeah. Yeah, that made me think the other thing that I do when I have anxiety, I think to myself, will this matter a year from now or 5 years from now or even 5 hours from now?
Like I do that with anger.
I usually do a year. Yeah, me too. Like, does this really matter in the grand scheme of things, or does it matter to me right now because I'm triggered? And usually it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, which doesn't make it any easier, but it's good for putting it into perspective.
No, but on the flip side of that, there has been things where I'm like, am I being ridiculous? Will I still be mad at this in like 5 years? And there are certain things that happened over 5 years ago that when it happened, I was like, no, I'm still going to be mad. And yeah, to this day, I'm still mad. Yeah. So that also helps me in validation as well. Like, am I overreacting or is this valid? That's a good like self-check. Yeah. Of, like, once time heals this, will it actually still be a problem, or was this a temporary emotion?
Yeah, that's deep.
Sometimes there are problems.
That. Yeah, sometimes they are.
We should probably take a little break and then we'll come back for the rest of our questions.
We are back. The next few questions we have are all sexual health related, which we have an entire episode on sexual health.
Two.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that it was like a two-part because we got so many questions and we're getting more. So
more.
Go back and listen to those, but we're going to answer a few more for you right now. The first one we got is, how can I be a responsible, sex positive, and promiscuous lesbian? I'm trying to have fun while also staying safe.
To give a concise answer, I'm going to boil this down to 3 really simple things. The number one, you know, get tested and use protection. Number two, make sure you're following your and the other person's boundaries or other people's boundaries, depending on who's involved. And number 3 is like, take care of your body, like make sure you're hydrated, make sure that you're recovering and having self-care days and that you're listening to what it's telling you. Like, I've always been a very sex positive person, but I also am very pro like taking care of my machine, you know?
That's beautifully said. I don't even need to add anything to that one. Another question we got was, can you get an STI from fingering a vagina or butthole? And short answer is yes. You can have.
I'm sorry. How do you say butthole and not laugh? Am I just butthole? I'm just.
I mean, maybe I'm just really mature. I'm like the most mature, I think.
I'm so mature.
Yeah. So short answer is yes, you can get an STI from fingering a vagina or butthole, especially if you have any sort of like lesion on your finger, or you could add to like the bacteria that's already in the vagina and
could lead to BV or a yeast infection or a UTI as well.
Yeah, there are other things that can happen just from a finger going into a hole, especially if they're going back and it's like going back and forth between the two holes. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, make sure you're getting tested, using the necessary protection. So gloves, those finger condoms. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are the main things. But yes, you can get an STI from fingering a vagina or a butthole.
So make sure you're tested before you engage in any activity. And our very last question, somebody said they are very confused about the actual risk for passing STIs between two people with vulvas. And in one of our queer sex ed episodes, we did say that there are different risks associated with any sexual activity. There's going to be certain ones that do have a higher risk factor than others. So for example, any kind of penetration is going to have a higher risk than like boob grabbing or something that is obviously not.
Yeah. Or mutual masturbation.
Fluids, right. But it is change. Like you are in some capacity exchanging bodily fluids, whether that's like, you know, putting your mouth on genitals, genitals touching each other, even your hand. You know, we just said you can get an STI by, you know, fingering because it's, you can't guarantee that there's nothing passing, that there's no openings. Bodies are like, we're just like little fleshy things and we're really fragile and we get little cuts and nicks and knacks everywhere. So you just like, you're never sure, no matter what kind of body somebody has, if you are exchanging sexual things, there's always going to be a risk factor. It's different levels depending on the activity, like I said, but it's really important to just be aware that it's, you're not like risk-free just because there's a lack of a penis involved or something like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't know that there are like specific numbers for this sort of thing, but again, we're just emphasizing harm reduction. So getting tested, talking about past or present diagnoses, using any form of protection, not using a finger that has a massive cut on it. If you have a finger that doesn't have any cuts on it, like choose that finger. Like there are options to reduce the risk of transmitting STIs.
We cover all kinds of in and outs of STIs in those queer sex ed episodes. I think those are really important ones to go back to listen to. So really encourage that. But that wraps up today's episode. So make sure you give a like and a follow and a review and a rating so that we can be seen by more people. And you can, of course, follow us anywhere on social media at Sapphic Survival Guide, except for Twitter, which is just at Sapphic Survival. You should also subscribe to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/Sapphic Survival Guide, where we have some bonus content and things. We always have our email open, sapphicsurvivalguide@gmail.com, but we want there to be multiple ways for you to contact us. So we have created a phone number. And if you would like to call in and leave us a voicemail, we would love to play that on the show and answer your questions. Please note that unless you say otherwise in your voicemail, you are giving us permission to play the voicemail. That phone number is 724-209-8877, and it will be in all of our episode descriptions moving forward, so you can find it there if you have some desire to call in the future. And for my own socials, you can follow me anywhere online at The Libra Gina, including my website, thelibragina.com. And by the time this episode comes out, season 2 will be well underway for Hello. So definitely go give that a listen wherever you listen to podcasts for your Jersey Shore recaps.
And you can find me, Cheyenne, at Hot Mespian on pretty much any social media platform. And with that, class is now dismissed.